Hi, everyone. Welcome to Coaches on the Rise podcast. Before we get into our show, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about our event that we're running out in Colorado Springs, Colorado, May 28th through the 31st, called Camp Elevate for Coaches on the Rise. It is a very unique personal and professional development program for all coaches of all sports. I guarantee you, when you leave camp, it'll rejuvenate you, we'll send you away with a lot of great ideas, and you'll meet some really, really cool coaches in the process. So if you're interested, we'd really love for you to take a peek at truenorthsports.net, and hope you'll join us in Colorado Springs this coming May. Now, on to the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Coaches on the Rise, the podcast for all coaches of all sports. Today, my guest is Dr. Tiffany Jones. Tiffany is a mental performance coach, sports psychologist, who works with a variety of schools across the country in helping them build the mental, psychological aspects of their games. To this day, I'm really fascinated on how many coaches spend very little time on the mental aspect of their teams. And it's just so much, like we work so hard on the physical and the strategy and the skills, and yet how an athlete thinks is not as much of a priority. And I this is why I love to bring Tiffany to Camp Elevate every year, because every year she will touch on a different aspect of sports psychology and the mental performance of an athlete. The list of stuff that she can teach and help coaches with is kind of never ending. So in this particular episode, we're also going to talk a little bit about some of the issues that Tiff is seeing out there in the world of coaching, from how much athletes consume alcohol, to their lack of sleep, to injuries, and the high levels that we're seeing in anxiety and depression in athletes, and how coaches are trying very hard to cope with that. It's a very, very interesting conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So let's go and get into the show. Today I get to visit with Dr. Tiffany Jones from X Factor Performance. And Tiffany is a really good friend of mine. So this is going to be fun for me to have a chat with Tiff. And I was fortunate enough to meet Tiffany at the soccer convention out in Los Angeles, 3 years ago, maybe? Yeah, I don't know. Something like that. And we just got to talking about her coming to speak at our Camp Elevate event, which she has done now for the last 2 years. And just welcome, Tiff. Thank you for taking time to visit with me. This is going to be fun.
Thanks, Julia. Can't wait. Here we go.
All right, let's do it. Let's jump in.
All right.
So, Tiff, for, you know, I work with all coaches, all sports, all levels, male coaches, female coaches, and just so people get a sense of who you are and what you do and your background, can you share with them a little bit, like, where you went to college and the sport you played and so on and so forth?
So I played at soccer at Hobart and William Smith, or William Smith College, with the great, going to be soon Hall of Fame, Alisanne Wilbur.
Yeah, Alisanne. Shout out, Alisanne.
Yep. So had the pleasure of playing for her, which was amazing. I then went to Springfield College for my master's and PhD. I coached JV soccer right out of the gate, and then went and transitioned and was assistant with varsity women's soccer at Springfield, and that was a great experience, but knew very quickly that the coaching world was not for me, and was studying sport and performance psychology at Springfield College. So now I'm a mental performance consultant and travel the country working with all different levels, from professional down to the youth level, parents, athletes, coaches.
Olympic level,
you got it. So been doing some stuff with USA men's ice hockey and working with their coaches, and so it's been great.
So Tiff, when you're like, give them a little bit of a menu or something, like talk about the Tiff Jones salad bar, like when you go like what kind of things when you go to work with the team and you sit down with a coach, like what are some of the different issues you're hearing these coaches that
that they want help with their athletes?
Sure. I think obviously the biggie is always like today's generation. How do we work with today's generation? And I think a lot of that I always say is parents have been parents forever. And if you ask any of us, we'll all say that our parents kind of messed us up in some way. So parenting is always the hardest job on the planet and ebbs and flows. I think the technology has been the game changer for this generation in terms of the attachment to the devices. I was just telling you the other day that your cortisol level, the stress hormone, goes up 80% when you are on your devices. And so I'm finding that student athletes in college are spending anywhere between about 4 to 7 hours a day on their devices, on social media or different, you know, YouTube or Netflix or whatever they're doing, but they're watching and on their devices that amount of time during the day. And so imagine being an elevated 80% stress 4 to 7 hours a day when they're already challenged with academics and their athletics and social pressures. And no wonder they're walking around with such high anxiety or saying that they're stressed. And so that's
overwhelmed.
That's the biggie.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big issue is the mental health. So coaches are trying to understand this world of mental health and how do we push our student athletes and challenge them, but in a way that's healthy, that's not overstepping. So I think obviously today's generation, including the mental health struggles, the instant gratification, how do we recreate or change our practices where we're not reinventing the wheel, but maybe we're changing a few things here and there to help engage this generation, because all we care about is we want them to be able to perform at their best. So I said, okay, if we need to smoke and mirror them a little bit, then let's smoke and mirror them a little bit so they do what we want them to do, influence them. Communication is always a huge thing, is, you know, being able to be a better communicator from head coach to assistant coach to student athletes to athletic trainers across the board. I find about 90% of the issues are because we're not having the fierce conversations that we need to have or the honest conversations with ourselves. Self-assessment and reflection is a big topic. How do we get our student athletes to reflect and assess? Same as the coaches. Obviously, that's what you do a lot of, is the reflection and assessment. Mindfulness training. I do a lot with the brain endurance training or cognitive training. How do you integrate that right into your athletic practices? Developing mental toughness. So I've created kind of a mentality chart that helps student athletes or coaches recognize the three different zones they're in. And if you can recognize it, admit it, and then come up with the hows, like your bag of tricks. So if you feel stressed or angry or frustrated while you're playing, recognize it, admit it, and then what are your hows to fight out of that mentality? So those are some of the hot topic things that I've been doing a lot with coaches. Well, and
we're
going
to break down a few of those a little bit later, okay. But one of the things I wanted to touch on, because you were talking about this generation and their devices, I heard you speak once about, you know, the actual brain development is behind because of the devices. Can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, different research is saying different things, but we're finding that on average, probably the brain maturity of the brain or the chemicals in the brain are about 4 to 6 years stunted. So where you're working typically with 18 to 22 year olds is what you think you're working with. Their brains are somewhere in the 12 to 16 year old brains, because our brain is a muscle and our brains don't have to work as hard anymore. There's no card catalogs. There's no everything. There's no encyclopedias. Like, you don't have to put the effort in to go find the book in the library, and then gosh forbid if someone doesn't file the book in the right spot, like, you actually have to go hunt it down in the ginormous library. And I tell this to students and they're just like, well we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't go find the book. And I'm like, no, you need the book, or you couldn't write what you needed to write. Well, I just would drop the class. And I'm like, but all classes are like that. They don't know what microfiche is. They think it's little fish. So I have to explain the process of, like, using microfiche or microfilm, or, and, they're like, well, we just want to do it. And so the brain isn't having to work as hard because everything is right at the fingertips. And so they haven't developed those aspects of the brain, which then leads into thoughts of toughness and perseverance and fight and grit. And if you can't find something right away on the webpage, like, digging all around it and not just texting or emailing your professor and saying, I can't find it. And you're like, well, did you look beyond the very first initial homepage? Well, no, it wasn't there. What do you mean? So actually that all starts to connect into things that are impacting coaches on the athletic world, because, you know, those are life skills and they haven't really developed those skills necessary to perform at their best.
Yeah. So. And I know, like, the reason I really love when you come and speak is because you do practical, you know, mm-hmm. applications mm-hmm. to the stuff that you really want the athletes to get or the coaches mm-hmm. to get. So when you come speak, the coaches actually get things that they can go back and mm-hmm. do with their teams. And right. Like one of the things that I know you've talked a lot about is this, what we kind of nicknamed teacup, you know, thinking correctly under pressure. Mm-hmm. But I think, can you talk a little bit about that? I know you were, you know, just give them a little cliff notes on what that means. Like, what is that teacup method? What is the heart math, you know, yeah. how that fits together?
Well, for me, the teacup is that a lot of times as coaches, we want to see pretty practices or we want to see our athletes perform at their best or because we're like, yay, I just coached crazy and now they're finally getting it. And I'm like, when are they ever going into a competition or match where everything is lined up perfectly and that there's not external distractors or the other team or other competitors aren't setting it up for us to fail or for you to fail? That's the whole name of the game. You're not going and playing against cones. So how are we training our athletes get ready to experience that? And confidence comes from practice and repetition. And if they've never had to practice in a similar environment to a competition or a game, then no wonder they crumble or don't perform at their best. So for me, it's always, I'm not trying to reinvent the world of any sport in terms of, I'm not trying to coach, but I'm saying, what if you kept everything 2/3 of the way it is, but just tinker one little thing? So I was talking to a basketball coach the other day, and he played with the Bad Boy Pistons. He played with Jordan. I mean, this guy's legit. And he was looking at me. He's like, Tiff, I'm really scared about all this stuff you're talking about. Can you explain it to me? And I said, all right, coach, so what's something you like to do that's old school, as you would call it? He's like, oh, well, suicides, Tiff. We're basketball coaches. It's where suicide started. And I'm like, okay, we're still calling it suicide. Okay, so here we go. We're going to do suicides. And I know that that's not the correct thing to call it anymore, but that's what he called it. And he said, okay, this is what we do. And it's kind of they're in teams of four. And it's kind of a relay race kind of thing that they do, but they have to finish it under 20 minutes. And I said, okay, what if all you do is you tell that group of four, you give them 5 words, and they have to remember those 5 words at the end of that 20 minutes. And you can do it in many different ways. You could ask each of them, all four players, the 5 words, and they all have to get it right, or they have another suicide. Or each player has to give 1 word, and as soon as one of their teammates gives a word, they can't get help from their teammates on the other words. And right there, it's brain endurance training or training under pressure. So they're physically getting fatigued, which means their brains usually want to go to this hurts, this sore, this sucks, I don't want to be here. But that can't happen when you're in a game when you get sore. You have to start really thinking and using your brain. So in order for us to train that, well, when they're doing a suicide, which is not fun, and it's hard, and we all probably have done them at some point. And imagine now if you have to like communicate with your teammates and be like, hey guys, we got to remember these 5 words. Hey fellas, we got to remember, what are the 5 words? And you keep one, it starts to create teamwork. It starts creating strategy and how are we going to remember these words as they're trying to perform a physical act, which is exactly what happens at the end of a game when you need them to run the right play. You can't have them forgetting the play or worrying about how sore they are, kind of like a J.R. Smith with the Cavaliers,
right.
Probably kind of checking out and not locked in and thinking about, I don't know what he was thinking about, but not what he probably should have been thinking about. And so if you don't want a J.R. Smith kind of
moment,
then we've got to train it and talk about it. And so here's the thing, I'm keeping everything the same, but we throw one little twist on it. Doesn't require any other thing from the coach, no special gadgets, nothing. Here's your 5 words. You could do a whole sentence. You could do play a podcast during that 20 minutes and have them have to answer 5 questions at the end of the podcast. And so maybe it's something you really want them to learn as well, but they have to lock into the podcast and not be worrying about how hard what they're doing is, or else they won't be able to answer the 5 questions. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of little things you can do that don't require a lot of extra effort on a coach's part that can really help train this.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit, like when we're talking about this, building this mental ability mm-hmm. Under pressure or while they're working out and they're getting tired. Mm-hmm. So when you're, lately I know you've been doing a lot of work with coaches and creating what you're calling mind gyms. Mm-hmm. And so can you say a little mm-hmm. bit about that, what those are and
sure.
how you're doing it? And
so, I don't work for this company. I wish I did. It's called HeartMath. So if you go to heartmath.com, they have some biofeedback devices. You're bang for your buck, honestly, I think for your team is to get the wireless devices, because then every athlete can download for free the app to their phone, and then they can go into a space that you've created and sync the device to their phone. And you can do that over and over and over again. So if you get two devices, then you're at a great point to start this whole brain endurance / having a mind gym. And then what I've created is a whole slew of puzzles and activities and different things where they can hook themselves up to the biofeedback device. They have to train the different zones. I want them to stay in certain zones. I have that written out for them and challenges. So what it does is it really helps develop self-awareness and mindfulness. You have to be very aware of your thoughts, because that changes how you feel. And you don't feel something until you think something. And so you and I both could be hooked up to a biofeedback device. And I could say, I need us to stay in blue. You have to stay in blue zone. And blue zone is laser locked and focused, high energy. You can't be too relaxed, but you can't get too frustrated. And you could have a jigsaw puzzle. I could have a jigsaw puzzle. And we're racing to complete the jigsaw puzzle. And you do get points for finishing the jigsaw puzzle first. But if you have to stay in that zone, so if you get knocked out of that zone, that mentality zone, then you'll lose points. So it's one of those things where you're physically doing something. I'm trying to race you. I can't control how fast you are, but if I keep looking over at you and figuring out how well or not well you're doing, that can raise my anxiety level based on how I'm thinking, which knocks you out of your zone. So there's a lot of different things. First step is they forget the games. They've just got to learn how to be aware of, what do I think to feel these different things? And then, can I control getting in and out of the zones when I want to, based on what I think, my breathing, where my focus lies? And then you can start really integrating these other kind of challenges. And you can do it by yourself in an individual basis, or you could challenge a teammate and go into a room. And I'm talking 10, 15 minutes a day. It's what Russell Wilson and Tom Brady and Tiger Woods and a lot of the greats that you've heard about. Mm-hmm. A lot of these athletes are practicing brain endurance training, or training under pressure in terms of their minds. And you have to train it off the field or out of sport before it will start to take in sport.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting to me. And Kate, and coaches, if you're coming to Camp Elevate next May, you get to do some of this mind gym stuff. We're going to be doing some experiential learning with this mind gym. And then Tiff's going to teach everybody how they can actually create their own mind gym at their school. Yeah. I'm so excited about this because that's going to be really fun, a fun session.
Yep.
So the other thing that we've talked a lot about in the athletes right now, like just some of the issues that we're seeing around sleep deprivation, alcohol usage, you know, and how that really affects, like, I didn't know until I met you, like, just the connection between sleep, alcohol, and injuries, like the amount of injuries that we see. So what are some of those issues that you're seeing, and what can you tell us about that?
Sure. So I think one of the biggest issues that I see, especially on college campuses or even our high school students, is there's a reason why our military uses sleep deprivation as a means of interrogation or torture, because after so many hours, even our strongest physically and mentally tough women and men on this planet will break after not sleeping, right? You start to hallucinate and decision-making goes out the window, and we become kind of cranky and emotionally not stable. And so I feel for a lot of the college coaches, especially because you're doing all the right things and your student athletes are sabotaging you and themselves, not on purpose necessarily, but are sabotaging themselves because they show up on Monday morning and they're giving 100%, but they're 100 of what? They're at 30 or 40% because of the behavior that maybe they did or did not do over the weekend. And so we're looking at, I always want them to get about 8 hours. 9 1/4 is optimal. Anything under 7 hours, there's an 80% more likelihood of getting sick or having a non-contact injury. And then we're finding that anything under 6 hours of sleep, you don't retain any of the memories you learned that day and store them into long-term memory. And so, like, all-nighters are a waste of time. It's not that our student athletes don't have time. They do have time. It's just that they don't time manage well. They don't prioritize school, athletics, and then whatever they have time for after that. They socialize all day. I'm finding they're taking 2 to 3 hour naps during the day, and then they're not on a good sleep cycle at night, and they can't go to sleep at night. I know many coaches, you like 6 a.m. lifts. I don't like anything starting before 8 a.m. I know that some of that's challenging based on your facilities and staff, and I get that, but I think some of you have done this exam because you don't want them going out and staying up all night and drinking, but they're doing it anyway. I'd rather it start at 8 and really educate your student athletes on sleep. If you binge drink, you don't go in a REM cycle that night, so you miss an entire night of sleep. That's the whole big, like, there's a whole slew of things with alcohol, but that's the whole connection with sleep, is that you just aren't going to get into that REM cycle. And remember, the REM cycle is where you rejuvenate and heal yourself. And I think would think that's very important to coaches. So, and a lot of times athletes go out and they binge drink the night after a game, and that's the most important time to recover and rejuvenate. And then they're not doing it. And so, yeah, again, they're showing up on Monday and they're giving 100 of what they got, but what they got is 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I'm seeing. But a lot of it links to time management and where's our commitment level as student athletes and what is our priority. And I will challenge you to challenge your student athletes when they tell you they do not have time. Trust me, they have plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I know, like, when we talk about the alcohol piece too, mm-hmm. and I've heard you speak with teams mm-hmm. about, you know, how it stays in your system for 21 days and, mm-hmm. you know, all these types of things mm-hmm. and how it affects you. And I think that's a real challenge because mm-hmm. I think coaches struggle with, you mm-hmm. know, they force them to go dry.
Right.
You know, like, in your experience and working mm-hmm. with teams around this, where have you seen success around teams that have chosen to go dry? Mm-hmm. Has it been coach-driven or has it been player-driven?
Yeah, it's typically going to, obviously, I want the coaches to say what they would like in their world, but we don't want it to become this covert mission to go out and drink and keep it from the coaches. And then we're, you know, player against player and groups of teammates versus group of teammates who are doing it. So, yeah, you want it to be player-driven. I always challenge, like, are you really committed? Because commitment's not a buffet style. So if you're really committed and everyone wants to win a conference championship, they want to win Final Fours, they want to go to national championship, they all have this, I want to be an All-American. And I'm like, well, no, you don't, because that's not what your behavior is saying if you're going out and doing this. And so a lot of it is I just challenge them and say, you can't say that you want to win a national championship and yet you guys are going out and drinking X amount of times during the year or season. And I say, you're lining yourself up for a beer pong championship trophy or flip cup trophy, but that's not lining yourself up for an actual NCAA bid or a conference championship. And so a lot of times you challenge, and sometimes when you challenge, if you really do have a committed team, they buy in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize, you know what, I actually am feeling better and we are performing better and we are getting along better. It builds better authentic relationships amongst each other. And then there's teams that will fight me on it. And then I'm like, they're not going to go where they want to go. Mm-hmm. Like, you just know, because there's a lack of commitment there. And it's not really about the alcohol piece to me. It's about what the alcohol spindles into. I'm not anti-alcohol, but relationships are not being built when they're drunk. Authentic relationships. In fact, a lot more times more trouble comes from those nights out in terms of relationships. We know it's impacting sleep. It impacts nutrition. It impacts performance. It stays in their system 4 to 21 days, breaking it down. And again, I always tell the student athletes, I'm not anti-alcohol, but, you know, if you're trying to do X, we now have the research and the information to show how badly it's impacting our performance if we do this. And so, yeah, my success, it usually comes from the team. I have coaches now who are so adamant about having dry seasons that they just will tell recruits flat out, this is our culture. And if this isn't something you want to be a part of, then don't come here. So the teams that have really now been dry for significant time will not recruit student athletes. And if they do come in, and, you know, the positive peer pressure from the team is, you don't do this or you're not part of us.
Mm-hmm.
This is not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if coaches can start that and get the ball rolling, and then they're recruiting, you know, and often there might be some student athletes you don't want to come because of that, but those aren't then the student athletes you want.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's kind of a famous story that we have shared in our speaker series about, which I'm sure Mary would mm-hmm. mind us sharing again, but it's working here with the University of Florida women's mm-hmm. volleyball team. And mm-hmm. 2 years ago, well, not this season, mm-hmm. but the season before that, where, you know, they were going back and forth about going dry.
Mm-hmm.
And can you share that meeting? Because it's really kind of a funny story, but it really was impactful.
Well, I had done some recon. So I kind of had planted seeds in the individual meetings. I knew a couple of the players I really needed to kind of hook, because if they were willing to do it, then everyone probably would do it. And so right before I left campus, I had them in a horseshoe kind of circle, and the coaches had no idea I was doing this, and they were standing behind them. And yes, it was extremely manipulative, but I knew that I had planted enough seeds where I thought this would be okay to do. And I said to them, I'm like, listen, I'm leaving here. You have 24 hours to go to Mary's office, and you're going to say one of two things. You're going to say, Mary, I am committed to winning a national championship, and therefore I'm going dry this season. Or you're going to say, Mary, I'm more committed to partying, and I'm not going dry this season. Those are your two choices, because to me, those are the only two choices. There's no middle ground. There's no half committed. And so for me, it was easy for me to say that, because when I knew that some of them just needed a little push and encouragement. And some people are like, wow, Tiff, that's tough. But really, what other option is there? You either are committed enough to winning a national championship, and therefore you know you're going to go dry because you know you can't win one not going dry. Or partying is more important than winning a national championship. There's no other way around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went. And there was one week, the very first week, there was a little bit of a
hiccup,
misunderstanding. They thought they could have one drink or two drinks and that would be okay. They were misinformed or misinterpreted what I had said. And so after that very, very first week, it was great. And they're dry again this year. And
They went to the national championship match that year.
And they went to the national championship match last year, mm-hmm. and had no injuries, had one at the end with CK, but that was because someone stomped on her hand. That can happen, but right. No non-contact injuries at all. And I think that, you know, might have something to do with that.
So. And then I think, too, like one of the things I think Mary would say as well is that the relationships on that team were more authentic,
yes.
you know, more genuine than... you know, they were having in the past. I think I can see how hard it must be, because, you know, you have these kids in the college campuses, and mm-hmm. and there's so much of that on the campus. So much of the social mm-hmm. life is mm-hmm. around that. And, mm-hmm. you know, I remember my college days, you know, I was no angel. And, you know, it's kind of like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get the temptation.
Yep.
And then when you look at it, though, mm-hmm. over the span of your lifetime.
Right.
And the span of a season, which mm-hmm. is what, 4 or 5 months, right?
Right?
You know, so you're giving up 5 months of your life for something that you really want to achieve.
And, right. And that's the thing. I'm not asking them to go dry the whole entire year.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be safe, because what I'm also finding, at least with our female student athletes, is when they go out and drink, they're drinking anywhere between 10 to 15 drinks at a sitting.
My God.
And a lot of it is because they don't like what they see in the mirror, and they don't think they can flirt or dance or be sociable. And again, this goes back a little bit to technology, is that they're more comfortable speaking to someone on their device than they are face to face. And so they drink so fast to get drunk so fast, so they feel like they can socialize. So they fill up like a 20-ounce water bottle, half of it's vodka, the other half is like orange juice, right? But they drink that and they're like, well, I had one. I'm like, no, that's 10 shots in there. You just filled half of it with vodka. That's 10 ounces
mm-hmm.
of alcohol that you just drank. And so some of it is they don't understand how much they're drinking. Men drink, I think, just as much, but it's over a longer period of time. Women are drinking shots. And they all laugh. You'll say that to them, and they're like, yep, it's exactly what we do. And so it's really a danger thing for me and a safety thing. And also the reasons why they're doing it is more alarming to me than anything, which is that they just don't feel good enough about themselves.
Yeah, and then this kind of leads into the next thing I want to talk about, which is, it's, you know, I'm hearing this over and over and over again, to where I really see how we've got to add more to our curriculums mm-hmm. around the mental health issues mm-hmm. and the anxiety and mm-hmm. feeling overwhelmed and, mm-hmm. you know, all the things that coaches are dealing with. And mm-hmm. it's like... And also just the when you have a student athlete that does have a serious mental health issue, mm-hmm. you know, where they're mm-hmm. suicidal, or, you know, how do you deal with that? And not just the athlete themselves, but how do you deal with the rest of your team around that?
Absolutely.
That's just huge right now.
Yeah. It's hard because mental health is never going to be an excuse, but it helps explain what's going on. And I think for most of the, if not all the coaches I work with who really are about student athlete development and human development first, is you do want to take care of that person first.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also consequences, unfortunately. Like if you do have severe anxiety or having panic attacks, coming to practice, you might not be able to come to practice and totally support it and tell us what we need to do. We're not kicking you off the team, but that doesn't mean you then get to start in the next game.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it doesn't impact the team. And that doesn't mean we're mad. or that we don't want you on the team, or that we're not supportive of that athlete. But it's also explaining that, because I think there's also this struggle with, well, they have a mental health issue. And yes, and we're giving them the support and we're loving on them and they're still part of the team, but that doesn't mean that there's still not consequences, even though it's maybe not their fault. I'm not going to just start a kid because they have mental health and they missed 5 practices because of panic attacks. Doesn't mean that then they don't,
yeah,
that there's not a consequence to that. I'm going to play the players that have been in practice and all of that kind of stuff. And so there's this constant negotiation of how do we supporting the student athlete, but also getting parents and administration and everyone else to understand, but that doesn't, I still have a job to do, which is put the best team out on the field, exactly, or on the court. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to support that student athlete. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different issues around it. Mm-hmm. And coaches are struggling with it because depending on the administration or the counseling on campus, I think there's a misunderstanding sometimes of, well, you know, they do have a mental health issue, so I don't understand why they wouldn't be able to play. It's still college sports, and at the end of the day, we're still trying to win games, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And I sometimes say, and unfortunately, teams cannot be halfway houses, and they're not rehab centers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if one student athlete starts impacting the whole on a consistent basis, then how are we going to make decisions around that? We're not here to save the one at the expense of the whole, I think, in most cases. Support the one 100%. Try to get him or her help, absolutely.
Well, I think that's the other part that's come up, is it's just not just athletes.
Right.
It's the entire student body, 100%. That the anxiety levels and the, mm-hmm, you know, from what I'm hearing from our coaches, mm-hmm, is that even the mental health programs on campus are overwhelmed. That,
oh,
they don't,
gosh,
have enough, like they're saying, like, it, mm-hmm, takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe even a month to,
yeah,
get an appointment with the counselors on campus right now. And that's crazy.
I've had some schools, it's a month to 6 weeks to get someone in. If you think about it, there's maybe tops, if you're at a school that has a lot of counselors, maybe 10, and that's off the charts a ton. And let's say you go to one of the bigger schools, like, you know, University of, let's say, 30,000, and we're finding about 25-30% of that are using counseling. So think about how many students that is. And if you only have 10 counselors, how many, and they can only meet maybe 6 kids a day. So maybe tops, if you have 10, which again, I usually see half of that, sometimes 3, 4, or 5 counselors on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just using 10 because it's an easy number. So maybe a total, they're able to see 60 kids, mm-hmm, that one day. And that's astronomical. And you need what, if we have 30, you need 3,000 students,
mm-hmm,
are needing it. Well, good luck trying to get them all in. And then what, mm-hmm, if they need to eat weekly or biweekly or
really
once a month,
yeah,
or,
yeah.
I mean, they're just not able to handle it. God love those counselors on campuses is all I'm going to say, is because they are extremely overwhelmed and overtaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, and I think the other part, like you were kind of alluding to,
mm-hmm,
is the part around managing the rest of the team,
mm-hmm,
when you have an athlete that has,
mm-hmm,
a serious mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, the rest of the team, and you know, I've heard a couple coaches say, like, they even actually have to, like, if a kid is removed from a team,
mm-hmm,
then the kid who was giving that kid the support,
yep,
they need help, because,
yep,
it's been such a huge burden on that best friend, or, you know.
And when I'm meeting with teams, a lot of times when I'm doing the culture stuff, I'm like, listen, ladies or gentlemen, you are not the FBI. You're not the paparazzi. So I don't need you jumping out of bushes trying to catch each other doing things that are not right or wrong. You're not AA counselors. You're not therapists. You're not EMTs, right? You're not ER doctors. So stop trying to play them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not your job. And so we start to talk about how do you support teammates, but you're not supposed to fit any of those roles, because that's not healthy, and you're not equipped to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not equipped to handle a teammate that's cutting themselves. You're not equipped to handle a teammate that is struggling with alcohol or disordered eating.
Yeah.
Your job is to be there. And so I tell those student athletes, your job is to go immediately to the coach. If you find out anything like that is going on, you need to go to the coach. And the coach is not equipped to deal with that either, but we are equipped to go find the people who can
deal with it.
Right. But a lot of times, the longer it goes on and the student athlete hasn't gone to the coach to tell them, the longer it goes, the harder it is to recover or to get,
sure,
help. And so I know why the student athletes don't want to do it. They don't want to rat out their teammates. And so I have to explain what ratting out is versus, no, this is not in your job description. Mm-hmm. You're not equipped to handle this. So stop trying to play one on TV sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not allowed to play that role.
Right, right.
But it's very challenging.
And you know, maybe you're probably a lot more into the why this is happening mm-hmm. in our culture with right. these students, mm-hmm. you know, that are mm-hmm. coming into college. It's mm-hmm. you know, with so much anxiety mm-hmm. and feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I know I've heard people say that some of it is the social media mm-hmm. that is going on. Mm-hmm. Like, what else can you tell us? Like, some of the why?
I think the youth sports that we're in, speaking truth. You know, so many. You know, parents or kids don't want to be told the truth. And if they are, they'll switch clubs or switch coaches or whatever. And we don't just let our kids sit in failure and define what really failure is and what it's not. And mistakes are part of life. And you're not going to get the results and execute always the way you want. And really, for me, the only time you fail is when you just give up. When you either succumb to the really negative thoughts or when you just say, you know what, I'm not doing it. Whatever, mm-hmm. I'm just going to go through the motions. That's failure.
Mm-hmm.
But we often, you know, we define failure as winning and losing and how many points you scored, and it's very stats driven. And for me, that's not what it's about. And I need parents to have conversations and let their kids fail and let kids try to clean up their own mess, so to speak, and have the hard conversations. And I don't think they're provided that. And a lot of the students that I'm working with were the best on their teams. So a lot of times they never had to really struggle. They never had to experience. I laugh all the time because I have these perfectionists who, like, I work at Embry-Riddle and they're in aeronautical engineering, and they're trying to they're literally trying to design planes mm-hmm. and fly, and they're doing like aeronautical engineering and physics, like literally they're rocket scientists. And they're sitting there and like they're struggling for the first time, and I'm like, man, that's the one thing I struggled so much when I was a kid in school and in sports and everything, because I wasn't the most academically smart kind of kid IQ-wise, and I definitely wasn't the most athletic. And I said, man, if you had just failed like I did, I'm like, I'm sitting back going, what's the big deal? Yes. Like, and it doesn't mean I don't care about school and I don't care about excellence, but I think because I failed so much as a kid and had speech problems, went to speech therapists, and things were just struggle. It took me a long time to learn things. I'm like, it really is, life now is so much easier for me. Mm-hmm. And I see these poor kids nowadays, and I laugh at with them. I'm like, man, you just should have sucked like I did when I was younger, and then this wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Big of a problem.
I'm like, I'm sorry that this is your first time dealing with it. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm finding that a lot of it, in this whole idea of perfection. And thinking I gotta keep up with the Joneses and compare myself. And it's so much easier now to compare myself with social media. Back in the day, you never knew what anyone was doing. You didn't compare stats online. You had to wait for the newspaper that was like 3 weeks old worth of information.
Right.
And now they can get everything so fast. Parents are comparing things. And it's tough. Like, I think that's where the technology comes in as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're paralyzed with fear.
Mm-hmm.
They're paralyzed. They don't know who they are. Their identity is wrapped up in their sport sometimes, which is the scariest thing. So yeah. a lot of different reasons, but yeah. Man, they do not do well when they don't get the result they want.
Yeah, if you are a coach and you're listening, and you're interested really in finding out more information and details and strategies around working with this generation, you know, beyond Tiffany being a great mm-hmm. resource, I also think like Dr. Tim Elmore mm-hmm. is a great resource. And growing leaders, because mm-hmm. they really are experts on this generation.
Mm-hmm.
So reach out to them and check out some of their materials and training programs that they have going on.
And what I love about them too is mm-hmm. I'm talking a lot about the struggles. I love that they identify some of the strengths of this generation. There mm-hmm. are strengths of this generation for sure. And a lot of times we spend a lot of time on, oh, this generation is just so hard.
Yeah.
And it is in some ways, but in other ways, there's some really great things like the brain endurance training and using technology. They love that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's things
yeah.
that you can really sell them on that really will help their learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Growing Leaders does a really good job identifying the strengths.
That's exactly right. Like, they, you know, they use a lot of images to
yep.
connect with them.
Yep.
And a lot of our coaches have had a tremendous amount of success mm-hmm. working with the Habitudes
mm-hmm.
And the images. So I want to shift gears a little bit mm-hmm. here because we're, you know, it is a little bit about the generation, but like just some of the changes in how coaches are practicing with their athletes. You know, you and I were talking earlier about, you know, that coaches, some of them still have that mentality of grinding it out.
Right.
And how is that not working with these kids? And what are some suggestions to do differently?
Well, I think, like, back in the day, and maybe we glorify ourselves a little bit, but, like, we think, like, we could go out and train 2-3 hours on our own and really be laser-locked and focused and really, like, love it and love mm-hmm. the grind. And this generation is not going to just go out and, like, they lose focus. They're very, like, you know, their text message kind of quick, like, sound bites and images. And so having them go out and do 3 hours of training, I actually is worse, because for me, I call that the green zone, where they start to lose focus. There's apathy, their minds start to wander, and that's where bad habits actually are developed. So they're out there for 3 hours, but they're actually developing bad habits because they're not locked into what they need to be locked into. So I'm a big, like, 30-minute chunks. Like, you should probably never do an exercise in practice or a drill in practice longer than 30 minutes, because forget it, done. It's only going one way, it's going to go bad. and you're like, but it was already bad, then end bad. And what is bad? Just because they're struggling doesn't mean that they're not learning in that drill. Mm-hmm. And so I'd rather you let them struggle a little bit and let them start to have more of a voice. I'm always asking athletes, what are you thinking and feeling? I think as coaches, we tend to try to guess what they're thinking and feeling based on what we hear and what we see, which gives us absolutely some insight. But with this group of young people, you may not want to ask them what they're thinking and mm-hmm. feeling.
Right.
The other thing that I find that they struggle with that is they can tell you what they're feeling, but they don't know what they're thinking. And we can't change behavior if we don't understand, like, what they're thinking, because the thinking is creating the feeling, which is creating a breakdown in biomechanics, which obviously we care about as coaches, because that then dictates performance and ability to perform. And so I'm a big asking them, what do you think and feel? I'm a big less is more. I'd rather it's super intense and super focused and then have a quick debrief and then maybe dive back in and then a quick debrief, chunking it. Rather than just having it go for X amount of time, because it's just going to go one direction. It's bad, and it's developing bad habits. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest things you can do is I watch old school practices and I'm like, what are you doing? There's no way. Like, there's still some basketball coaches who do 4 hour straight practices. I'm like, you're better off doing 2 hours and 2 hours and chunking that 2 hours and then chunking the 2 hours than having it go, because there's no, can you focus for that long? No. I can't.
No, honestly, I don't think it's just this generation.
Yeah.
I think our whole culture has a lack of attention span.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like 30-day challenges or all these kind of thinking, really? Like, who can do a 30-day challenge anymore in our culture? Like, nobody wants to do that.
Nope.
Everybody's, like, fast-paced. Everybody has no, you know, they just, mm-hmm. I'm done. Okay, mm-hmm. 30 minutes, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Next. So in closing, just, yeah, you've worked with so many different high-level coaches, like all the way up, like we were saying, the Olympic level, pro level, and also, you know, Division III, Division II, all over the place. Can you just share a little bit, like, what, from your perspective, what do you think some of the great coaches have?
Wow. They're smart in the sense of they're smart enough to and humble enough to know what they don't know. And so they're always learning and growing. I think right here with Becky Burley, like she's always bringing in other voices and ideas and is constantly, Al San, who I played for, same thing, always reading and growing and trying to learn from anybody. Doesn't matter if they're older or younger. Different sports.
Mm-hmm.
And so their minds, I think Anson Dorrance was like that too, in the sense of always trying to learn from others. I think that's a huge thing. And also trying to adapt. If you're not adapting, then you're not going to be successful. And so I think sometimes I hear from coaches, Tiff, I feel like you want us to be soft. I hate that word, but soft with this generation. And I'm like, it's not soft. They learn differently. They get excited. Their motivations are different. Their fears are different. So really, if I have to do X to get them to be able to do Y, then I'm willing to do whatever it takes. That's what a good coach is how do I constantly adapt, bob, and weave, and figure out ways to teach so that they learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are, like, the two biggest things. Obviously, relationship building is huge, too. Connecting and building relationships off the field, out of sport is huge, too. That's a huge, building relationships. But I would say the other two biggies is always learning, always growing, admitting when you don't know something, and learning from other sports and other coaches in other sports, and absolutely adapting to their teaching.
That's great. And last question I want to ask you is, do you Can you say a little bit about, because like many coaches have never heard of Camp Elevate, and sure. they don't really know, like, oh, okay, why would I go to Colorado? Why would I go mm-hmm. to Camp Elevate? Can you say a little bit mm-hmm. about why you're going to be at Camp Elevate next sure. May 28th through the 31st in Colorado Springs, Colorado? Yeah. So why do you come? Why do you like it?
Gang, I'm telling you right now, like, there's tons of things out there workshop-wise and things that X's and O's and all that kind of stuff. That's not what's making coaches great anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not what's separating coaches. Is the X's and O's and the tactics and all that kind of stuff and video analysis. It's really the relationship piece. It's doing all the things beyond the X's and O's. It's growing and learning from other coaches from other sports, other fields, like sports psych people or mental performance coaches. If you're listening to this, you should come. Strength coaches, you should come. Athletic mm-hmm. trainers, you should come. Mm-hmm. Assistant coaches, head coaches, volunteer coaches. Anyone who is working with kids or with athletes should be at Camp Elevate mm-hmm. because you are going to get so many resources. It is so hands-on. People are so open about what's working for them and not working and the failures that they've had and what they've learned from their failures that I just, there's nothing else out there that's like it. And so it really is coaching coaches to work with their athletes from all aspects of types of coaches. Mm-hmm. So athletic trainers, you're a coach in mm-hmm. a way. And so I think there's nothing out there like this. I love that there's men and women in the room together coaching men and women's sports from all different divisions, all different talent levels, and everyone can learn from everyone. And it's such an awesome, unique experience. Mm-hmm.
So. And I honestly, it's, and I know we don't always want to use this word when it comes to professional development.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have a lot of fun we a lot of laughter, a lot of good times. Yeah. And I think that coaches need that. They need some rejuvenation, for God's sakes. You know, get out there and take care of your spirit and laugh a little bit.
Right. It's a little therapy. There's a little therapeutic, I think, right?
Exactly.
It's a recharge. A lot of the coaches that I know have gone always say, I was losing a little bit of steam and
mojo.
Was getting my mojo and I was getting so frustrated and I was feeling anxiety. And then after Camp Elevate, it was just such a recharge for me. And I was so excited for my next season. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was... That's awesome.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Tiffany. I could talk to you all day.
Yeah,
all this stuff is so interesting to me. Really appreciate it and look forward to seeing you at Camp Elevate.
Yay, Camp Elevate.
Go coaches.
Yeah.
Hi, coaches. Thank you so much for joining us on this Coaches on the Rise episode. There's a few little things that we'd really like to ask you to do for us that might seem little, but they're huge for True North Sports. First, if you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe, and we'd really like to hear what you have to say about our podcast by writing a short review. The second thing is, please share our podcast with other coaching colleagues that you have. And the third thing is, join us on social media. Follow the different programs, things that we're offering through True North Sports for all coaches of all sports on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for joining us, and until next month, keep shining bright, coaches.